Transponder is an internet radio show about two transitioning adults who, after a year of transition, wish to share their experiences and thoughts about gender issues, transition, and everyday life.
This episode of Transponder was brought to you by the Alessa Foundation, making transgender media possible.
Also brought to you in part by Peterson Toscano and P2 Sun Productions.
As well as The Anonymous Factory, protecting secret identities for over 40 years.
Well, I know that you're all eagerly awaiting our interview, but there is one voicemail that we want to play and a congratulations that we want to give out. So here's the voicemail.
Hi, ladies. It's Jimmy155. I wanted to call in and give an update. I came out officially as trans at work. My boss is completely supportive, and so are most of my coworkers. So I'm officially Mr. Jimmy155 at work now, and a lot of weight is off my shoulders. I'm really happy, and I'm really lucky. I'm a few podcasts behind because I was saving them to listen to while recovering from the surgery I'm having on Friday, but I wanted to say hi and wish you both good luck in your future endeavors and upcoming job interviews. I'll be donating some funds to the podcast as soon as I can. Keep up the great work and have a great week. Bye.
Well, congratulations, Mr. Jimmy155.
We're very excited and big, big, huge hugs and congratulations.
Congratulations, and we'll hope that surgery went well for you, which I think I already heard from you because this voicemail is a little old, but
yeah,
I think I did. So, all right, congratulations.
Excellent, and you know, no better news could start this podcast.
Exactly. We got another interview,
and we're recording,
and we are Transponder.
Calling on Skype. We're going to edit the front of this because we're cool like that.
And no one wants to hear us sing because we can't sing on cue.
Hello there.
Hello there. How you doing today?
Oh, here we are. I'm doing great. I'm so excited to be chatting with you guys. Okay, perfect. We're all set.
Yeah. All right, this is Transponder, episode 53. And
this is Mila.
And this is Jaina.
And we are here talking with Andrea James, who is the founder of Deep Stealth Productions and also has been in several movies, including
Transamerica.
Transamerica. She was on the television show Transamerican Love Story and is the director of Casting Pearls. You want to say hi, Andrea James?
I would be happy to say hi. It's so good to be here. And, yeah, for some reason, every project I do has to have the word trans in it somewhere. I don't know what's up with that. But,
It gets a little confusing when we, because Transamerica and Transamerican Love Story have, like, that same front word in it. But it's also like a
right.
branding,
and
right?
And Transponder. I think we're stuck with that prefix trans, all of us. So.
Yeah. As long as people don't get us mixed up with transmissions, then we're good.
Right.
Our competing podcast transmissions.
Yes. I know how it is. You know, I have a few competitors myself, but you just have to push forward.
Right. Now, you are also responsible for TS Roadmaps. Is that correct?
That's correct. I started TS Roadmaps as an AOL website back in, I guess, 1995, late 95, early 96.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually moved it to its own top-level domain. And it's one of those things where I just kind of set out originally as a hobby to write what I thought I wish someone would have handed me when I was 11 and learned the word transsexual. And people would write in with questions, and then I'd put up another page, and now it's thousands of pages.
Yeah, it's just a huge amount of material there.
I think it's actually one of the most comprehensive websites on transition that's out there right now.
Yeah, you know, and the focus is really consumer issues. So it's a pretty narrow range, but there's obviously a lot to consider, and everybody has a different path to take, which is why I liked the roadmap metaphor, because some people want to go quickly on the fastest route, but maybe not the safest one. Other people want to go more slow and deliberate, or the scenic route. So it just felt like the right thing to call it.
Yeah, I think it's an incredibly helpful website, and that, interestingly enough, it was one of the first websites that I found when I was looking for information on trans issues before I ever even really acknowledged that I was trans myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's one of the great things about it is that at this point, people don't need to reinvent the wheel. That information's been covered by my site and a couple of other sites that were even around before mine, so that you know, the next generation doesn't have to spend a lot of energy and time looking for that stuff and waste a lot of time and resources so that they can do things like little podcasts and stuff like that instead of worrying about all this other silliness.
Absolutely. And so you have a few others, too, like I think one was Hairfax. And
yeah, Hairfax was actually part of TS Roadmap originally, but I was getting so many letters from people who weren't trans who just had a question about hair removal or had a unique issue that wasn't addressed online that I thought, well, I'll send this off. And now it's sort of a site unto its own that's a destination for people interested in that topic.
So what is your future as far as websites and things like that? Do you have any plans for new sites or plans of expansion of your existing sites?
Well, you know, websites are kind of like gardens, and the bigger they get, the harder they are to tend. So every day I get, you know, several letters from people with updated information about something or a question that's not covered on the site. So it ends up taking a lot of time just to kind of maintain a site and keep it relevant. You know how a lot of sites tend to kind of go dead after a while and yeah. The links start to break. So it takes a lot of energy to really keep everything where it is. So right now my focus is more towards doing scripted entertainment and getting into really changing things through other kinds of media.
Well, why don't you talk to us a little bit about what you're doing at Deep Stealth Productions and with your new media projects?
Sure. Just for those who don't know, I co-founded Deep Stealth Productions with Calpurnia Adams, and it was something that came out of discussions we had when we were both living in Chicago. The initial goal was to really address some of the problems in the media and how we're always depicted in these really negative terms. So I've always felt that the fastest way to change hearts and minds is through the media and by telling our stories in a human way that makes it, you know, achievable for people to understand. So that was where we really started. And we were very lucky early on to have some great mentors who were involved in the film Soldier's Girl, which, you know, as you know, is about Calpurnia's life and the tragedy that happened with her and her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, we met a lot of amazing people, and they were very instrumental in helping us out. And there's this weird thing out in Hollywood where if you have stuff that's out in the world, it'll come back to you in all kinds of strange ways. Like, you know, Felicity Huffman called out of the blue after hearing about our voice video and wanted to work on her voice, and that led to consulting with her on the film Transamerica and talking about sort of what would be going on in a character, Ted, you know, who was going through transition at her age and at that stage in life.
Wow, that's really interesting. You would have an opportunity to actually work with people who are trying to portray transgender characters and allow them to do it in a respectful and knowledgeable way.
Yeah, and, you know, there's it's all a process. It takes time to get anything to where, you know, everything's all well represented because there's just a lot of factors involved. You know, people often ask, well, why didn't they cast a trans woman in that part? And unfortunately, there's box office realities out here where, you know, a big name star is going to open a film better than somebody who's not well known.
Right, at least until there's a big name.
Yeah, well, at the time, you know, Felicity hadn't done Desperate Housewives, but she had filmed the pilot, but that was it.
Yeah.
And so that film really took off, I think, largely because of the success of Desperate Housewives. And it's just one of the... Oh, go ahead.
Do you think the success of that movie really helped kind of, I guess, open up how we were portrayed? Because it seems like that was kind of a big breakthrough movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think it was, you know. And the performance, I think, was one of the first times where you're laughing with the character instead of at the character. And that's very, you know, that's very disarming for people to be able to kind of look at a situation that they haven't really considered before, but have it be humanized like that. And, you know, Felicity's such a great actor that she just really, you know, brought so much to it, not only during the filming, but afterwards. All the media that she did, she was very concerned about saying the right things and putting out information that was consistent with the messages that we were hoping she would say.
Right. Well, it was also really nice in just in the trans community in general to hear the comment, it's great to have a movie that shows us respectfully that doesn't end in tragedy.
Yes. Yeah. You know, we're sort of moving out of this phase of being the noble victims, I always call it, where we're always, some terrible tragedy always befalls us, which almost feels like we're being punished in a way by these writers.
That's how I thought. It's like it's like a morality play in which, like, you are shown this is what it costs you to be different.
Yep. And, you know, I mean, there's no shortage of roles out here where we're written as these, you know, victims of criminals who, you know, get their comeuppance in the end. And it's just going to take time to really whittle away at that. And I think Transamerica was a really good start.
Yeah, absolutely.
The next big thing, of course, is to get trans women playing those roles. And then after that, have trans women playing non-trans roles and trans men, too.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it's something that in Hollywood, I mean, just from my own experience and, you know, working on films, you also have the added thing of not only does someone have to be able to act, but they also have to be able to catch the attention of the general audience as opposed to just the trans audience. So when it comes to having, you know, trans actors in, you know, non-trans films, you encounter that whole thing where they're now up against your, you know, just average Joes or whatever, and, you know, your superstars. So doesn't that add a lot of complication to the casting process and things like that?
Yeah, and there's so many factors that go into it, and, you know, it's just a complicated thing. You remind me of an interesting story where I had written a script with Calpurnia that was for a short film, and we showed it to some people who we really trust, and one of them said, "This is terrible." And I thought, you know, I was assuming it was going to be an answer of, "Oh, this is great, you know, go for it." But they said it was terrible. And what they said was that it sounds like you wrote this for your email list. And that really stuck with me because I think that's the tendency, is to kind of preach to the choir. And as you said, you're never going to get past the general audience, out to the general audience, if you're just talking so specifically. It has to have something universal that everybody can connect with.
So talk about the difference between, you know, your experiences within the trans community and your experiences within, like, the Hollywood community. Do you find that there's a big difference in the reaction that you get from people when you're talking about your projects?
Well, I think, you know, in the trans community, my work is better known than it is, you know, in general in production at this point. But, you know, I'm hoping that'll change in time and that, you know, it really comes down to who you know and what your track record is. You have to work out here well and pay your dues and build up a level of trust with people who you want to work with again and again, and that's how you really move up. And it's kind of true with the trans community as well. The difficulty with the trans community is that we're still really finding our voice, and that's going to take time because there's always struggles over definitions and how to move forward, and there is quite a diversity of opinions and interests and motivations that all get lumped together.
Yeah.
And we have overlapping interests, but there's definitely some distinctions that cause some friction once in a while.
There's been a lot of discussion in the trans community recently about, you know, this idea of having representatives of the trans community and how, you know, basically in the past 20 years, there have been people who have stepped forward to basically be role models in the trans community. And a lot of people have a very negative view towards someone stepping up and saying that, you know, that they're representing the trans community. And I kind of wanted to know what your opinion on that subject was as far as being a representative for the trans community.
Well, you know, and that's a complicated thing because I try to say that I'm not representing anybody but myself, but just by being out there, you end up kind of being a de facto representative.
Yeah.
And I think one of the real problems with our community is how quickly we embrace people who get a little bit of a media spin. You know, the one that comes to mind for me is Susan Stanton. You know, here's somebody who's thrown into the media spotlight, and, you know, sometimes that can work out where they end up being very eloquent and well-spoken and kind of understand all of the nuances of that. Like with Calpurnia, you know, that was a situation where she wasn't really planning on doing all this media activism, but she just happened to be in that place.
Right.
But, you know, people were so quick to embrace Susan, and then she started, you know, kind of saying some things that were antithetical to the reason people were supporting her. And that's always the risk you take when you start to just embrace anybody who's getting a little bit of media spin.
Well, I mean, she was, in a way, she was kind of, she still is kind of a noob to the whole trans community in general. So, you know, I think it was right. You know, she was kind of in a position where she could have been a spokesperson, and people were quick to kind of want to capitalize on that without really understanding if she should be the spokesperson.
And there's also a lot of opinions that early in transition change. You know, a lot of times when people first are exposed to the trans community, they have, you know, repulsion to certain things that once they get to know about it and are educated, they suddenly are able to accept and wouldn't dare to speak out about, you know?
Yeah, you know, what a metaphor I use sometimes is religious converts, you know, that they tend to be very idealistic and very sort of rigid in their thinking because they've embraced this thing and they've really committed to it. But a lot of times early on, they're very intense about their feelings, and that can be, you know, sometimes problematic. And I think there's a similarity with people who transition.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I suppose, in a way, you'd be considered one of the trans celebrities, right? So, I mean, what are your feelings on that, on kind of being...
Well, I always say that I'm a sub-lebrity, so...
Sub-lebrity?
So, I think, you know, I'm at this level where people will be like, have we met before, or have I seen you somewhere before? And then I'll explain, and they're like, oh, right, yeah, that's it. So yeah. I don't consider myself, you know, any kind of household name or anything, but the kind of work that I'm doing, I'm really trying to, I'm not so interested in being, you know, known as a person who's out in the media and doing talking head type stuff. I'm really more interested in creating the conditions for getting good stories made and getting good media representation out there. So it's kind of a different project than wanting to be famous or whatever.
Did you think that when you started like the instructional videos and stuff, that Deep Stealth would sort of, I guess, your exposure in media would kind of reach this level, or?
Well, we came out here with the express purpose of getting out there in the media, and you know, to be honest, one of the reasons that I came out here was that it was kind of bothering me how a very tiny percentage and segment of the community tended to get the most media coverage. And, you know, that's a perennial problem, and it's not something that's going to change anytime soon. But I think that being out there as an assimilated trans woman who's been able to do stuff that was successful that didn't really have anything to do with trans stuff, as well as doing successful trans projects, has really put an image out there that I'm pretty proud of.
Yeah.
So what about your experiences with the Trans American Love Story and the most recent, you know, television production? I mean, I know you had a little bit of screen time, and you know, you had a great deal to do with the actual production of it.
Yeah, it was a project that came along. You know, Calpurnia and I had talked with Logo after our short film did pretty well with them, and we had talked to them about a project, and they came back with this because it was right at the start of the writer's strike. And at first, I was kind of like, I don't know, but they got World of Wonder involved. And World of Wonder, of course, did Transgeneration about the college students in transition. And mm-hmm. I felt like that was such a great project, and they handled that so well that I was, you know, very pleased to work with them. And so they said, would you like to be on it? And I was like, yeah, sure. But the thing that I was most proud of is the small role I had in helping to sort of shape where things were going in the story, and you know, the just keeping it on a kind of classy level for that kind of show.
Right.
Because we did actually end up getting some interesting discussions that I don't think have ever been captured on, you know, on film before. I think the real breakthrough for that was showing the guys who are interested in dating trans women.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
that's just something that hasn't been discussed that much on film. And it was, I think, really groundbreaking to see these guys talking about what it was that they liked and showing that it wasn't this terrible, you know, freaky, stigma-filled thing, but it's just, these are regular guys who, you know, happen to like trans women, and that's that, you know. And then making it just like any other dating show after that is really, I think, pretty subversive.
Yeah, I thought it was great that it just sort of destigmatized, you know, having a trans partner.
Yeah, I thought it was also really good that you got rid of the one guy right at the beginning who seemed to be more in the category of, you know, that kind of
guy.
The shady realm, which is usually what you see when people say, oh, this is somebody who likes transgender people. You usually end up seeing the more shady
the
side of
chaser.
It.
The tranny chaser.
Right.
Right. And, you know, I do want to say that I'm glad that he went on the show, because I do think that, you know, there's plenty of people like him out there, but like, I have friends who are Asian who say that there are guys who are interested in them who sort of see them as interchangeable. And, you know, that's one of the problems with being part of a very small group, is that there are going to be people who exoticize you and eroticize you in ways that are unfortunate, I guess. And at least he was on there and he was honest about his feelings. And I think that was just as important to hear as anything else.
Absolutely.
Well, we've always said we'd eventually like to interview a tranny chaser.
Yeah, I think it would be really interesting just to see the mentality and the thought process and things like that that go behind the type of attitude that this particular gentleman was displaying.
Right. Well, you know, we were in a documentary called Middlesexes, Redefining He and She, and there was a guy who had moved to Thailand and had sort of hooked up with a trans woman. And it was interesting to sort of, you know, just on a personal level, I found him kind of, you know, repugnant, but it was really great for him to be on there sort of talking about what it was that he liked and didn't like, just to get that out there, because I think that makes the whole thing less of a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And well, you know, honestly, they're usually interested in the pre-op, which that guy was. He's like, well, if she got surgery, I guess I'd be disappointed.
Right. And that's, you know, that's one of the problems, is that the way I describe it is that there's a lot of people who have a very narrow point in transition where they're interested in us. It's like when we're as feminine as humanly possible, but haven't yet taken surgical steps.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a pretty narrow area that's a little, problematic for most of us, because the people who are interested in getting surgery, you know, that's about the last thing they want to be dealing with, is somebody
exactly.
who's interested in them for just
right. So now a quick question about, I know that on Trans American Love Story that you had an F to M on the show, and I was wondering if you had much interaction with F to M's in the Hollywood community.
You know, one of the things that is a real problem to me is the invisibility of trans men in the media. It's just an ongoing problem that is changing, you know, over time, but it's still a real issue. So that's one of the things that I was also really proud about with Trans American Love Stories, that they cast a trans man, and then they also had the trans drill instructor, who's a great guy too.
And never would have guessed.
Neither one of us.
Neither one of them, really. But
yeah.
A drill sergeant really just took me by surprise.
Yeah, and it's good to have those images out there, because all of those things just deflate these stereotypes that people have about, you know, what it means to be trans and what you know, each of us is really all about. So as far as the trans man community, you know, unfortunately, a lot of the web stuff I've done is really geared towards trans women as well. So beyond the legal stuff, which is applicable to everybody, my own work has really been to the exclusion of trans men, not for any other reason than I just don't have the time to add all of that important information.
Well, and really, what what you need is a trans male version of Calpurnia Adams and Andrea James, right?
Right.
Yes, yes, and that would be ideal. And I think that's going to happen sooner than later. You know, it's just a question of somebody stepping up and being willing to do it. You know, there's a problem in our community where our best and brightest tend to disappear, and that leaves the rest of us to kind of, you know, do a lot of the work that other communities don't have to deal with. You see that in the gay and lesbian world too. You know, it's not as bad as it was, but it used to be that if you could assimilate and pass straight, you would just not even get involved. And it's still true to a lot of extent at the high levels of, you know, Hollywood stardom. Like, it's still a box office problem if you come out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know that just from our own listeners and what we've heard is that, you know, people really, they get attached to people who are in the trans community and then they disappear. And so you see a lot of, you know, people just pop up for 6 months or a year and then they vanish into stealth and no one knows what happens to them. Just like, you know, the websites that are up or things like that. People realize that, you know, that the exposure is causing them personal issues and so they just vanish. And that leaves very few resources of, you know, openly trans people.
Yeah, and, you know, the average lifespan of a website, a personal website, is probably about 5 years, just based on, you know, about 15 years of observation. And it's a shame that that happens, but it's also completely understandable because it's a serious commitment to, you know, changing your life. I mean, being out opens you up to all kinds of criticism and all kinds of exposure that, you know, if you can pass in ourselves, you really don't need to deal with. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people in our community who are really, you know, kind of mean, and they're angry at people who are succeeding or doing well. And they tend to attack the people who are successful, and they think, well, I don't need to deal with this. I'm just going to go back to living my life. And so it's almost self-defeating, but until we can control the people who feel a need to do that or explain to them why that's a bad idea, it's just going to continue.
Yeah, I think, though, that for every person that is out there attacking, you know, someone who is out and open, there are, you know, 20 or 30 people who are quietly listening, and that the words that are spoken by the person who's out and open can make a big impact on their life, and you may never know it. You know, there are probably people listening right now who are alone, who don't have anyone to talk to, and this might be their only source of information about trans issues. And if you weren't talking on the show, how would they ever know about what you're going through?
Yeah, yeah. And that's one of the reasons that I committed even early on to keeping information out there no matter what and being out about myself. When I was transitioning 10 or so years ago, you know, I did it in advertising, and it was, you know, I was very lucky that I had several key people who were supportive of me, and that led to a situation where I decided I was just going to be out, because advertising is a very small industry too, so there was no way I could stay in advertising and not be out. So mm-hmm. I just felt like I would just, you know, bite the bullet and stick it out. And then, you know, I decided after that it is important for people to see somebody who's doing okay and not being afraid. I remember the people who were inspirations to me early on and how important that was. So that's why I've stayed out there in the public eye.
So when you were in advertising, how did being out affect you professionally? Did it cause you a lot of issues or...
Well, it was, you know, it was a complicated thing. I was writing mostly beer commercials at the time for a large brewery, and you know, they're pretty conservative. And luckily, in advertising, it really comes down to how good your work is. You know, if you're doing work that's successful, then it doesn't really matter what you're doing in your personal life, and so. So that was great. And, you know, there's a lot of LGBT people in advertising. So it's for a lot of reasons. It was just a really good little place to transition.
Yeah, it seems like creative fields in general help.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, on the other hand, there were some people who just like any workplace, had serious issues about it for, you know, personal reasons or religious reasons. And so I did have to deal with some of that as well. I was, you know, one of the most important parts of my site is the work transition site or section. And the real key to that for anybody who's listening and is about to deal with it is making sure that you're explaining to people what you expect of them, like what this is and isn't going to do in terms of them, and put them at ease, because that's really, they're looking to you for a way to respond. And if you're leading the way with a positive attitude and clear explanations of what is and isn't going to happen, that's really going to make everything easier for you.
That's good advice.
Yeah, it definitely is. So what would be the one piece of advice that you would give to someone who is just figuring out that they're trans and, you know, doesn't really know what to do or where to go from here?
Well, the easiest thing to do at that point is to kind of turn inward. And it is important to do a lot of introspection, but it's also really critical to reach out and not try to solve all of your problems just by yourself. That means, you know, looking online for information. It means talking to people who are doing it online. You know, there's plenty of great forums where you can talk to people. It's important to, you know, protect your privacy, and there are ways to do all of that anonymously. But as you figure it out, the path will become more clear to you if you're realistic about your expectations and if you have self-acceptance. And that's really the key to it all, I think, is when you start to realize it, you just have to not go into denial and not say, you know, oh, this is just a phase or something, because putting it off is only going to make it worse. It's really important to deal with things realistically and decisively as they come up and really listen to your heart.
That's wonderful advice. So, switching the topic really quick here, I want to know a little bit about what's going on in your current film projects. And you said you were actually on your way to a film premiere?
Yeah, there's a film festival in town, and a couple of friends have had films. Calpurnia and I were in a short film that was in this festival last night, and some other friends have a film tonight. It's a gay martial arts movie, and it's set in rural Colorado, It's about this high school kid who's having a lot of problems with thugs in his small town, and this Asian woman comes out of retirement to train him. So it's a classic kung fu kind of story, but with a gay twist to it. So, and a female hero, which I think both are great. So so that's tonight at the Directors Guild. And we're actually in pre-production on another short film that Calpurnia and I are going to do, and it should be a lot of fun. It's a comedy, and it's got a trans theme to it, and she plays a character named Ava, and I play a character named Joyce. I can't go into too many details, but they have a little crisis that they have to solve, and it's silly, but I think a lot of people will find it relevant to their own experiences.
So my ex was also watching Trans American Love Story, and she thought you looked really great, by the way. She said, she goes, well, I think Andrea James is more my type. And so that leads to the question, Trans American Love Story 2, will it star Andrea James?
Well, they've been pretty quiet about what's going to happen with season two. You know, there's been talk about an STM suitor, or I mean, a bachelor. Oh. There's been talk about, you know, a lesbian version or a gay version, you know, or even a bi version. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, all kinds of options, but nothing serious has been settled yet. So I'm just kind of waiting to hear with everybody else, but I certainly hope there's another season. They might even have Calpurnia come back. You never know.
Hmm. Oh, is there a little insider information that you can give out there, or is it all hush-hush at the moment?
No, I honestly, I'm telling you everything that I know. I don't know what all is going on with that. I saw some of the executives involved at the GLAAD Awards, and they were all clammed up and not saying a thing either. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. It was a fun project, and, you know, I will sort of take it as it comes with all of that, and whatever happens, happens.
So with the millions of things you're doing and involved with, are you still doing a lot of activism in general, or are you, or is kind of just being out there your activism now?
You know, Kilperny and I have really, we kind of feel like we've paid our dues in terms of doing a lot of pretty serious activism. I still do a little bit. You know, there's some things that I still do, like in June, I'm going to speak at the National Women's Studies Association Conference with Joelle Ruby Ryan, because she asked for people to do a panel about some of the controversies around, you know, the pathologization of trans people and the exploitation of us in academia. So so that seemed like a nice opportunity to do a little bit of activism and say a few things I wanted to say. But beyond that, you know, the media activism is really taking a lot of my time. I've been working with Trans Youth by Allies, which is a national organization that helps young people who have gender variants or are, you know, wondering about those kinds of things, and just helping them deal with issues at school and with families.
Right. Well, I think, you know, just being in the media spotlight is a form of activism. So, you know, it sounds like you're doing a lot. So,
right, you know, I'm really pleased that there are people who are doing the political stuff, you know, like Mara Kiesling out in D.C. and people at the Transgender Law Center. It's like we're now getting to the point where, you know, just 6 or 7 of us don't have to do everything, which is really nice, you know, that now there's people who can specialize and focus on real specific areas. And, you know, I don't have the patience for the politics stuff. I can't deal with that kind of, you know, 2 steps forward, 1 step back. But I'll sit in the most boring, you know, pre-pro meeting for 8 hours and argue with people over stupid crap because I just have the temper for that. So
right.
I'm glad that there are people doing all of these things and that we're now able to do a little division of labor and split things up.
So being that you're out in the media spotlight, do you find that you get contacted by a lot of transgender people, like emails and phone calls and things like that? And how do you deal with that?
Well, when I first put up the site, you know, I still answer every email that I get. It sometimes takes a while, especially if it's complicated, but I've unfortunately had to kind of hide my email address and really try to scale back on that. There was a point where I was getting, you know, between 100 and 200 emails a day, and a lot of them were pretty easily answered questions. But, you know, when you start adding up just taking, you know, 2-3 minutes per email, like, you know, you're looking at half a day just to answer email. And it just got to the point where I needed to cut back on that. So I do get contacted a lot, and a lot of people contact me now because they have interest in, you know, doing some sort of media project of their own. And that's a complicated thing out here because, you know, for legal reasons, I can't accept unsolicited ideas. And all of that stuff has to come to me through an agent or somebody like that just for everybody's protection. But I do always give people advice who are interested in, you know, doing some kind of project like maybe a documentary or something. There are plenty of great ways that you can do that without spending a ton of money. And the means of production have gotten cheaper and cheaper over the years. The real trick at this point is, you know, making money off of it in terms of means of distribution. You can always put something on YouTube and that'll get it out there and you'll get, you know, some views, but it's probably not going to make you much money unless it really stands out and leads to something else. So the real trick is if somebody's doing something, you know, because it's just in their heart and they need to do it, or if they're looking at this as a business. And a lot of times when people contact me, I think they have in their head that they want to, you know, get into acting or they want to, you know, become a director. And those are hard things to do. And it's not like, oh, just call this person, you know, at this number and they'll give you the sign up form. It's a real process that involves a lot of hard work.
Yeah. And a lot of paying your dues and
just seeing it from, I went to film school down in San Francisco, and just seeing how hard everyone works. You know, you've got a class of people, and 99% of those people are going to fail in the film industry. And that 1% that does are the people that are up, you know, really late nights, and they're working every day, and they're putting their dues in. And even them, you know, it's still like, you know, rolling the dice as to whether or not you're going to be successful in Hollywood as opposed to just having a day job.
Right. And you have to be willing to give up just about everything to do this. It has to be your true passion if you really want to make it. Most feature film directors make an average of 1.7 films in their lifetime. So you don't get a lot of shots at it. And you really have to be passionate about what you're doing, and you have to have a kind of stamina to see a project through, because one thing that took me a while is advertising projects are usually measured in weeks, and out here, you know, film projects are measured in years, and it just takes a lot of time and energy, and it's a war of attrition, and people are always trying to whittle away at the idea and shave it away and put their thumbprint on it, and it's a complex series of negotiations that most people don't have the stomach for.
Yeah, it's you can find out your original vision has been far diluted by the time it, you know, makes it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what I've tried to do is, you know, every project that we've done since we've gotten out here has been something that we thought was manageable but also had some impact to it. And we've been very lucky that so far everything has been a success in its own right. You know, the Vagina Monologues event went great, and, you know, the documentary, which let a lot of other people see it. The short film that we did not only, you know, won the season for the Click List, which was on Logo, not only got us some good exposure, but that whole thing was shot basically to be like an acting reel for Calpurnia to show mm-hmm. that she has this range, and with luck, you know, that will continue to lead to more opportunities for her. So we've been very lucky that things have gone well so far, and out here, a failure can really make it harder to get other things done. So we try to pick very carefully to make sure that anything we do is going to turn out okay.
So I have this movie idea. It's going to be a 9-hour movie, but I was wondering if you'd want to get involved. It's about this evil Mila Tater. She has remote privileges, and she won't give them to me. And so I have to rise up on this noble quest. And at the end, I throw her in a volcano or something. I'm still working on it.
I like it.
Do you like it?
I like it. I like awesome. Special effects like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to have lots of special
effects. Sounds very epic. I like it.
I think there's going to be lots of special effects.
There's going to be special effects even in scenes where it doesn't need special effects.
Yes, I blame sunspots.
Yeah, sunspots. You know, it's actually interesting. We were talking about sunspots in our radio. I'm working on my broadcasting license right now, and apparently sunspots can make FM radio waves bounce off the atmosphere and actually get transmitted way farther than you thought they were, like cross-country, where you're only supposed to have a small footprint. So the radio station that I'm working at right now is they got phone calls from like New York, even though we're in California, saying that they heard the show.
Huh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's just a fascinating thing.
But yeah, so you know, it's great that you guys are really getting out there and doing your own media activism. I've been really pleased to see that I was I think number 53, is it? That's like, you know, one a week for a year. So I'm the first one after your full year of weekly podcasts.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be 1 year in July, actually.
Yeah.
Oh,
so we actually been doing them a little bit more than a week, probably about every 5 days. We kind of just do it if we're in the mood to talk about something, we'll just do it.
I see. Well, that's great.
And we actually got called celebrities the other day. Huh?
All right.
So it's like, if there's a D-list celebrity, we might be at the very bottom. Not that we get recognized on the street or anything, like you.
Listen, you're celebrities in your own right. Don't sell yourself short. There's nothing wrong with being a ghetto superstar. That's what I always say.
Absolutely. Well, you also have the honor of being the first celebrity to talk about us on one of your on your website. So,
it's probably like our first half dozen episodes or something. You had listened to our podcast and you said you liked it and you gave it a good plug on your website. I remember. Right when
we got started. Yeah, you know, it's I don't listen to a ton of podcasts, but I've actually listened to a few thanks to y'all. I started listening to I Love Lard a bit. She did some funny bits about Trans American Love Story, and so I started listening because she's pretty funny too. And you know, it's great with podcasts because they're pretty informal, but it is a chance to talk about things and get things out there that don't usually get talked about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just because of the fact that the FCC doesn't regulate podcasts allows people to be more themselves and not have to really restrict themselves when they're talking about subjects.
Right. Yeah. I've been using my broadcast quality mouth, but I'm actually quite a potty mouth, so so I'll continue in that vein. But it's always tempting on a podcast to say something sassy.
Oh, we bleep, so if you...
We use the Rebecca Nay bleeps.
Yeah. She's on...
I love it.
Training Rec Radio, so...
So, yeah, she sent us a whole list of bleeps, so we use them.
That's great.
We've been very fortunate that most of our interviews have actually been very PC and not had any bleeping necessary.
Not PC, but clean.
Clean, that's it.
Which is good, because it makes it, I guess... available to people from a wide variety of, you know, walks of life.
Exactly. And that's why I usually, you know, try to keep it clean in interviews, because I do want it to reach as many people as possible. And, you know, that's part of the game. So yeah, but you know, it's really an amazing time, I think, to be a trans person and to be doing media activism, because I really do feel that we're on the cusp of some major breakthroughs in the way that we're depicted in the media, in the opportunities that we have in the media, and just in general the ways that our community is going to improve by leaps and bounds. You know, there's this interesting demographic bubble that happened you know, around the time that the internet really got going, where a lot of people who probably would have transitioned had they known about information when they were younger, jumped on the bandwagon and transitioned. But now people are transitioning younger and younger. So that's one of the reasons I'm really excited about Trans Youth Family Allies. I really do feel that's the wave of the future, that people are going to transition the way that people come out as gay or lesbian in high school or middle school. And there's still some ethical and legal issues that aren't clarified as far as trans youth. And so that's to me the one area of activism that I'm still very happy to get involved in beyond the media activism.
Yeah, and we'll definitely put up a link to that in our show notes.
There's actually a Facebook group for it too.
Yeah. So. I started that up a few weeks ago, and we're rolling out some new corporate identity stuff, including a new brochure, which should be out very soon for educators and healthcare providers and parents. So I'm really pleased at how that's turning out, because it's got a lot of nice pictures of, you know, families with trans youth, and you know, they're just living their lives and enjoying themselves. And I think getting that out there is going to help a lot of other parents feel better about their own lives.
Yeah, what I think is really nice about doing the work with the trans youth is that it's something that society has a lot harder time chastising. You know, when someone transitions when they're 7 years old, you can't say it's for sexual reasons. You know?
Right.
Well, J. Michael Bailey would just alter his theory a little bit.
Right.
Oh, we had to bring him up, huh? Yeah, well,
let's,
you know, that whole thing was a bit of a mess, but it's pretty much over. I mean, there's still some people trying to fan the embers of that thing, but, you know, I think for all intents and purposes, that kind of thing's never going to happen again. I think that's really going to be seen as a turning point in the way that psychology and psychiatry exploits our community.
I think at the time it was definitely a fight that had to be fought, that there had to be some pushing back. So,
yeah, and you know, it was ugly, but in the end, I think that it kind of needed to be, and it wasn't as ugly as it could have been, but it just, I was in a unique position where I knew several of the people who were depicted in the book and, you know, knew the Chicago area where he was trolling for, you know, test subjects and stuff like that, and actually had lived like a few blocks away from him. So there's a lot of things that haven't even come out in public that I know about what was going on there he just needed to be aware that his book wasn't going to fly. There's something you can beat.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, it was kind of like, it was a little bit of a tipping point too. I think that, you know, people were getting a little angry about experts telling us what we were about.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and it's still a problem in the media. You know, if you watch any Oprah or whatever, they always have to trot out some expert to explain who we are. And, you know, the gay community used to have to deal with that as well. And it's just going to take time for them to be shamed into not doing that anymore. There's still a ways to go with that kind of stuff. You know, they always want to show before and after pictures and no old names and stuff like that. It's really played out, if you ask me, you know, from a media standpoint, but people are still, you know, fixated on the procedural stuff.
Well, they still ask, like, the childhood questions, you know? Like, well, tell us about your childhood. Like that somehow,
right,
you know, had something to do with it.
It's like, how long have you hated your mother? It's like that kind of question,
right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, your mom died. Oh.
Right. Because people just want to find a cause or a reason, and you know, there's nothing definitive about that stuff. And transition to me is about the after; it's not about the before, and it's not about the during. You know, that's one of the main reasons I wrote all of that stuff about the during, is so that people can get through it and get on with the after. Because the real point is to live your life, you know, honestly, and you know, the way that it feels right. And that is what happens after you transition. You know, that's when the real life starts.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna have to wrap up here. If you want to stay on the line for a minute right after we go off the air, we would really appreciate that. We've been talking with Andrea James from TS Roadmaps, Deep Stealth Productions, Transamerican Love Story, Transamerica, and a ton of other stuff. We really appreciate having you on.
So, yes, and poke Calpurnia for us. Just give her an
edge
for us.
And, I will do that. And thanks again for having me on. This has really been a nice casual conversation.
Yeah, thank you very much for taking the time out of your schedule. To all of our listeners, good night.
Good night.
This program is a member of the Trans FM Internet Broadcast Network.
TransFM.org.